cliffcentral.com.
This is the Youth Leadership Platform brought to you by Sibanye Gold.
At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country.
Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
A very good afternoon. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Tau. Shout out to the team, Sasha Lee, and the rest of the team for putting this together. Today, we have a very exciting show like we always do at this time. 2 p.m. on a Monday, we bring you the feel-good lunchtime show on any digital platform in South Africa. So today, I'd like to start off with something that I wrote. Because it ties in nicely with pretty much the topic that we're going to have with today's guest that I'm going to introduce in but a jiffy. And it reads like this. You understood the irony of life and underwent a phase of paying the price of creativity, which is senile dementia caused by the depth of character you had from the atrocities of life, which placed you way ahead of your age. Your cynicism about the reality that posed as a threat to your success turned your aspirations of wanting to be the first black classic piano player into an idol revered by generation. God bless your soul. So I wrote this for Nina Simone because she is the author and songwriter that wrote the book, song rather, actually, that is the highlight and very topical for today's conversation with our guest, that is titled To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. Now you're wondering, who do I have in studio? The lady's MCM. He's a TV. He's a television presenter. Shaking his head as I say this. He's a television presenter. He's an actor. You must have seen him on headlining alongside Nomza Mombatha on Tell Me Sweet Something. He's a fashion designer. He's a creative consultant and he's a philanthropist. And I'd like you to internalize those words, because our conversation about brand intelligence and to be young, gifted, and black will be centered around that, because that is the brand of who we have today, which is none other than the popularly known Maps Maponyane. Welcome to studio, man.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for that introduction as well. You took that on like it was a real scholarly assessment, then you just attacked it full on. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Well, it's very fitting for somebody that's studied a BA and, you know, treasures and values writing and
words.
And
yeah.
I'm
100% content. And look, I'm a logophile as well, man. Logophile, wordsmith, whatever you want to call it. Do a lot of, just in my spare time, just for fun, a little bit of writing and stuff. So yeah.
I actually read across something like that, and I was going to put you on the spot and ask you to give us a snippet of something that you wrote.
What in what regard? Sort of
poetry, right? It's part.
Oh, jeepers! I haven't written poetry in ages. No.
So it's mainly
Mainly just like different articles or like little underground blog posts of sorts, or sometimes actually if I'm in the mood or the feeling or whatever. I used to, when I was in school, I used to do like ciphers with friends and stuff.
Yeah.
So I used to do a lot of like hip hop lyrics and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I used to have a lot of fun with that. But it's been a while since all of that. But it's always great to write your thoughts and things that you, that just pop up, and those little aha moments which you can sort of start to compact and contextualize into something even greater.
Mm-hmm. You know, before we get into the crux of what we want to talk about, you know, with you being such a very powerful brand that a lot of other brands, you know, want to associate themselves with, take us through the beginnings, St. John and Soweto, where Maps' life began. Pretty much your journey.
Yeah. Geez, I I grew up in Soweto and Protea North, and I was always really, really a handful, a big, big handful for anyone around me, my parents or my teachers or any of that. I was extremely, extremely naughty, and I, you know, went to the school, called St. John's when I was in primary school, and just struggled to fit in. I was one of two black kids in my class, and I just really wasn't, it just really wasn't gelling or working out. And I also couldn't speak properly. Also just came from a complete disadvantage in terms of, in comparison to, you know, where my fellow students were. Mm-hmm. And geez, I had already been suspended about 3 times before grade 2.
Sheesh.
So I was a real, I mean, I always tell the story. I was, when I was about 12 years old, no, I was about 10 years old, and I was in, might have been, yeah, I was 10, and I was in the office with my mom, actually might have been 9, and the my principal, whose office I knew very, very well, yeah, I was, you know, it was just like entering another classroom for me, just another day at school, had actually, you know, once I got suspended for like the 3rd time, had said to my mom that I should probably go to Boys Town, and... You know, otherwise I'll just end up as more than likely end up as a convict by the age of about 12 or 14.
Mm.
And I remember how hard that was for my mother. And a couple of years later, I ended up, you know, moving to another school, went to KEPS, you know, government school, which had all walks of life, and there was not an anomaly or, you know, a rare finding in terms of being a black pupil.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw kids who were both affluent and from, you know, a poor background and everything, all coming together, and it completely opened up my mind in that learning environment. And I tried to adapt that same attitude I came with from St. John's, and I was immediately mm-hmm. put in my place, you know. I remember my first week at school running away from the grade sevens. I was in grade 4, grade 5, and I tried to be, you know, hardcore, and I remember running away and hiding from them. They all wanted to beat me up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in a short space of time, I had a little bit of an epiphany and sort of started finding myself and finding my place in my surroundings and life. And yeah, things slowly started to change from there. I mean, I'm going to end it there because that's still sort of the beginning.
So now, transitioning nicely from the naughty and always in trouble Masego at that particular point in time, you transitioned into the university life. And what makes you decide, I'm going to do a BA. This is where I want to be found.
Okay, so I'll just press resume from where I was before we jump to there.
Okay.
So then after that, I don't know what sort of started changing. And then I ended up finishing primary school as one of the head monitors. Somehow behaviorally I changed, but also what was a big change was overcoming my stutter when I was about 12 years old. So I gained a little bit of self-esteem and confidence back and everything, and wanted to cooperate a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last school, which, you know, semantics aside, you know, people say they asked me to leave, but, you know, I thought it was just a good idea. Probably for the best of us, you know.
Yeah.
So the best for all of us if I left. And they took me back in high school. And yeah, I was a completely, you know, different kind of kid. I always was the kid who tried to do everything as much as possible, be heavily involved, and try to achieve as much as I could, did all the sports, did all the extramural activities, and really, really wanted to make the most of school, and then ended up as one of the heads of houses by the end of high school as well. So a complete 360 in the sense that, you know, when I was at the primary school with some of those kids who had also still been at that school when I went back, I remember that a lot of their parents would never let them hang out with me because I was just bad news.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they were just like more than happy.
You're notorious for the kid who's already always in the principal's office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it had changed. And I then had there's such a loaded story in between finishing high school and going into varsity. But long story short, my parents were just like, listen, you're done with matric. Taking you to the school has been extremely painful for us. Put my parents in considerable amount of debt as a result. You know, I was one of those kids who would always struggle to get his results at the end of, you know, each term because the fees hadn't come through or whatever. And they're just like, cool, we need to sort this out. We've sent you to a good school. We hate to say this, but you're on your own. And from then onwards, I had to be, you know, I had to be responsible and grow up and learn as quickly as I could to start to make a life of my own. And I, you know, thought of a few different things that I would really enjoy, that I might be good at. I knew that I love people. I knew that I love talking. I knew that because I had a stutter, one of my greatest dreams or one of my biggest goals was to be able to go into something that required nothing more, or not nothing more, but fundamentally required oratory skill.
Okay.
So I wanted to be able to monetize the fact that I had this horrible disadvantage and I was getting made fun of at school all the time and, you know, was made to feel, you know, pretty worthless for having a stutter and not being able to control it, to then being able to articulate and be eloquent enough in the English language or whatever language and speak in a way that you have words marching out one by one in a single file like an army walking towards a front line.
Which is what it's come to now.
Exactly. And be able to monetize that. And that's where my love for, you know, languages and speaking and all of that came from. And I, you know, also loved people too. And I started just thinking, okay, well, I, besides working, you know, maybe retail over there, so I was one of those guys who was working at Akajo, earning my 12 rand an hour, working another job here, all those piece jobs and everything. I had also gone to SA Fashion Week to Lucilla Boyson, who's the director of SA Fashion Week.
As an assistant.
Yeah, I was a PA. And literally, I just like asked her, please, please. She doesn't hire men. You know, that's a thing. She's very strict on female employment and empowerment. And, you know, just really, really, you know, told her I wouldn't let her down and everything. And that's sort of how I forayed into that fashion field. And then I remember when I went for my an audition for a schoolboy rugby show called FMB Classic Clashes.
And
I got that job, and that's when I got into the TV presenting side of things. And as they say, you know, the rest is history. I remember while I was doing all of that, I was trying to figure out, you know, what else I could possibly try out, and someone said I was okay to look at, so should probably try some modeling. So I was like, okay, fine, why not?
Yeah.
And then that started working out, and then while I was studying, I was doing all those things. I initially went into varsity thinking about doing architecture or law, but actually ended up going into a field of aeronautical engineering.
Okay.
But then with, you know, immediately realizing how hectic the schedule was of both that and trying to work so that you could sort yourself for varsity, it just wasn't going to work. So I ended up doing, focusing on BA, knowing how much I love, you know, trying to broaden my knowledge as much as possible, my knowledge base, and get in as much learnings as possible. I ended up doing a quadruple major in English, French, Media Studies, and International Human Rights at Wits University. So for me, it was a really... a really, really great time in terms of the fact that, you know, I was maybe not enjoying it then because of, you know, what was happening on my side and what was happening back at home and all of that, and really wanting to make sure that I could keep up. And I had no allowance in my mind for a plan B ever, because, you know, plan A had to work.
Otherwise,
I wouldn't be able to, you know, go through everything. And I wasn't going to mess up as well and take the scenic route because I didn't have the time for that. You know, I wanted to get a career going and everything. And unlike, you know, unlike a lot of people, I think my age, as soon as I left varsity, I had that advantage of being extremely determined, really good at time management and making things happen. Yeah.
So now, just to put a couple of things into perspective for our listeners, you know, if you just joined us, we're sitting with Maths Moponyan, and to catch this interview, you can go to www.cliffcentral.com, and later on today, all podcasts will be available. So
hold up. So you're letting the people know who are listening to the show that they can go onto the website to listen to the show.
Right now. Right now. Right now. Right now.
No, I'm kidding.
So, yes, brand intelligence. Intelligence is about your ability to acquire knowledge and to apply that knowledge. So as a brand, then it's you stand for something, either from a company point of view or from a personal point of view. So now brand intelligence coming to you, Maps. Mm. A lot of gigs have come. We call them in the streets gigs, right? But endorsements in a more formal and traditional way have come your way because of your understanding of brand intelligence and what your brand stands for. And now these brands want to align themselves with you. You know, when did you come to a realization that, you know, I'm Maps Maponyane, I stand for this, and this is how I'm going to capitalize on this?
I think, that's a very good question. Part of that was very early on because I had to figure out, you know, who I am and be confident in that. So, you know, from the point where I was told that, you know, you need to make a plan and make things work, I went through a whole process of trying to work out, you know, who I really am and what I can offer and bring. Excuse me. And through thinking about that very early on, I needed to know that from the onset so that I could go into it knowing what would distinguish me, you know. And it was thinking about small things, for example, where when I went into the modeling world, mm-hmm. I was probably turned back by, you know, about 4 or 5 different agencies, basically just saying, listen, you know, it's not going to work. The glasses look is just not a thing. It just looks too, what's the word? It was at the time, well, not even at the time, they just thought it would be, you know, too boring. People wouldn't really catch on to it. It's very commercial and too boy next door, and there's just nothing about it. And that's when I actually decided that was going to be my thing, because they're like, you know, we could do it without the glasses, but, you know, that was also going to be part of my thing. So it was sort of like sticking to your guns from the get-go with things like that, mm-hmm. that start to separate you, you know. And from when I started going for different auditions and gone to the whole acting and the presenting and whatever, and started really doing well with that, I saw a lot of those agencies trying to get me back.
Exactly.
And, you know, say, actually, you know what, we can make this work and everything. And slowly there were more clones popping up. And then, I don't know if you remember, like, I would never obviously say that I started the trend, but definitely had, I feel, a role to play in it, where, you know, there's now just like, glasses are cool.
Yeah.
Glasses are cool.
It's very true. It's very,
you know,
true. Very true.
And you've also seen, it's also, you know, opportunity and time is also, sorry, timing is also a real thing. So perhaps also I got in at the right time with that, you know, confidence and sticking to that and whatever, and the rest of the world was maybe already headed in that direction or something, because even worldwide it's a thing,
it's,
you
a
know?
Thing, yes.
And that's just momentum that has kept going, and it's just always been one of my trademarks. But also I've always known that I've wanted to be a aspirational, progressive type of person,
okay.
Who is, who has a great deal of considered and intact moral fiber and a good moral compass. I always had the problem, literally, also growing up and looking at people in the industry, struggling to find role models in the entertainment industry, and if I was going to be in it, wanted to be someone who was worthy of being called a role model, or even if I wasn't worthy, where if someone saw me as a role model, needed to be, you know, even if it was just one person, good enough for them to have to follow and lead a life and aspire towards a life just like theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, it's very important when I think about, you know, whoever it is I engage with or any brand I work with, that I stick to that and I keep that consistency and not fall away from that. And seem like, you know, you're just all over the place and just chasing whatever opportunity or money that comes your way. And instead, you know, how you build a brand is knowing exactly who you are, what you're about, and not willing to budge from that. You know, mm-hmm. being able to be both consistent in how you appear with that brand, you know, when people get to interact with you, and, you know, how they see it from afar, and also how you conduct business as your brand. You need to be completely consistent with that, where those brands will continue to think of you every single time, because there's no one who does it like you. If that makes sense. So one of my things that, you know, if there's one thing, you know, people sort of walk away with is that I always struggled, and I also feel like, you know, we have a lovely lady in the, in the studio, and then I feel like I also need to, you know, look both ways. But one of my struggles growing up, I remember I heard it when I was like 7 years old quite often, and it always bugged me, and I'd hear people saying, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Okay.
And a few times I would just sort of, I'd be confused by that. Maybe I just didn't understand the concept. Maybe it was one of those English proverbs that just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, and there's many of those. You know, like, you know, you take things so practically. I remember being six and hearing things like, you know, you don't throw stones at rock houses. Yeah. Sorry, at glass houses.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what would people be? But obviously, then you grow up and you work things out. But one of the things was, you don't know. It's not what you know, too, you know. And I always would go to my parents and say, but I don't. That's not fair. I don't understand that. So are you basically saying that it doesn't matter what you know, as in how good you are at something, and all that matters is who you know to be able to, you know, progress or work your way up? And they were like, unfortunately, you know, that's sort of just how life works. And I morally had an issue with that. So they always, you know, I look back and obviously it seems very naive, but they always were just like, you'll understand one day. And I, for me, then took that on as a challenge to work out what my answer to that would be.
Okay.
And I remember maybe being about 11 years old and getting closer and closer to that. And then when I was in high school at some point, I think at the start of high school, sort of came to the conclusion, and this is partly of how I live my life as well and how I've even started from the beginning, is that if you are really passionate about what you're doing, and you're willing to work really hard at what you're doing, and you really love what you do, and not compromising the person that you are, then you can completely change that notion of it's not what you know, it's who you know, into the fact that if you have all those attributes and you have that attitude and approach, then you become the person that the who you know wants to know, because they can't ignore just how good you are at what you do. So it's I think that's always been the better approach, where, you know, again, if you're sitting here and you're doing this and you're doing this damn well, people will talk. Like it will just, even if it's just, you know, myself and Sasha Lee and whoever else, I bump into someone like, that person's so good, and that person tells someone else. And that's literally, honestly, fundamentally how I think I've built my my career.
Yes.
It's always been based on the fact that if you're going to hire me for any single thing, any single job that you want me to do, I will always make sure that I am an absolute pleasure to work with, that I'm professional about it, that I'm completely reliable, and I will always deliver and, you know, maintain that pleasant environment to be in when you're working with me. And as a result, you'll want to keep working with me.
Experience, the brand experience.
100%. You need to get a great experience from interacting with the brand. And a lot of the time it was word of mouth that would lead to the next thing and the next thing. And I'd get a call from a brand or a client saying, hey, we want you to come and do this catalog. We saw you working with, you know, this is right at the start. We heard you were working with so-and-so, and they said, we have to use you because you're great. And for me, it's like, you know, you're like, okay, I don't know what's so great, but I've always stuck to the guns that, you know, if you just have that attitude, that positive attitude of really wanting to work hard at it and making sure that you always deliver and everything, it's that whole thing of knowing that you're not perhaps the most talented or most gifted, smartest, strongest, biggest, fastest, but if you have that attitude of the fact that in whatever you're doing, no one will outwork you, then you can never fail.
You just keep outdoing people.
Exactly.
That think they're the fastest, strongest.
Yeah.
What's a typical day like in your life, man?
There's nothing typical about my days. What's a typical day like? It all depends on how I manage it, but a typical day will include one or two shoots, about three or four different meetings, lots of time in the office in the evening, emceeing an event, presenting something. Yeah, it's always sort of a mixed bag, but it will always consist of me almost all the time waking up at about 6 a.m. and going to bed anywhere between midnight and 2 a.m. every single day, and sometimes even later. But I like to make the most of as much time as possible. You know, if you speak to people, and it's quite funny if you watch interactions with people, that there's just living comedy shows if you listen closely enough, where everyone's busy these days. They just say like, "Oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm so busy, man. Oh, it's just the thing. You to be busy. It's almost like just cool to be busy. Mm-hmm. You know, you're hearing people saying, "Hey, how are you doing? I'm busy." And then the other person says, "Oh, yeah, I'm busy too." And they're like, "Oh, you know, I got like 4 hours of sleep last night." And they're like, "Dude, 3 hours. 3 hours, man. I got 3 hours of sleep." And it's like, competition. You guys are literally trying to outdo each other of how busy you are. And, you know, you having a competition on how many hours of sleep, when really it's to completely your own detriment. It's a really stupid thing to try and lord the very little sleep that you get, because it's not a very productive attitude to have. And you work a whole lot better, obviously, with more sleep. And my main thing is always productivity with anything I do. So that's why things have to be as efficient as possible. Things are always planned in a certain way. When when I'm booking certain things or being booked for certain things, they all have to line up with this, and my days are structured like that. And if it all matches up, then it works out. But for me, maximizing time to work out how productive I've been is a whole lot more than being busy, because anyone can be busy. It's very, very easy. If your work just piles up and you're on social media the whole time, you'll get busier and busier and busier because you're not getting done what you need to get done, or, you know, whatever it is. And I think if you can focus on how much you can maximize from every single minute of every day, and making sure that you are, you know, progressing, then you've achieved your goal for the day. Yeah. I always want to make sure I go to bed a better person that night than I was when I woke up that morning, time.
So it's not the hours, but the effort within the hours that makes all the difference.
100%.
So now tell me this, as a creative consultant, you start working with brands like Spree, and you release your own line there. How does collaborations like that happen in the South African context? There's a lot of, you know, influencers, there's a lot of aspiring creatives that just see a MAPS tag on a clothing line, but they don't get to see what happens behind the scenes when that deal is facilitated.
Yeah. So your question is, how does that come about?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, look, with that, I've managed to thankfully garner some sort of reasonable amount of respect or reputation in terms of people wanting to know what I think is sort of cool in terms of a fashion sense, and what would work, what wouldn't. So for a lot of brands, I've quietly done that and done some creative designing and directing for different brands or whatever, and helping them, you know, pick what they should focus on and what will work and what won't. And, you know, that's something that had a pretty good track record behind it. So when brands want to try and interact with more South Africans to appeal to their local audience, such as a Spree that sells clothes online, so that they can have a lot of more homegrown fashion on their site, then that's when, you know, at some points I came up in the conversation and they wanted to know how I would feel about being a part of that. And then it's a long process of what season it is, what kind of a look we're going for. Are we going for basics? Are we looking for, statement pieces or basics with an edge or whatever it is? What will appeal to people right now? And, interacting with the local audience to see how you can get them to buy into the South African designer a whole lot more than always focusing on the international. So in order to bring in more South African designer, they want to see how they can, if they can make it work with their most, you know, sort of most popular local personalities or something. If they can sell that, then hopefully local designers can sell that too, because sadly we have that attitude of the fact that we'll always go for international almost every single time over a local designer or local brand. But, you know, obviously not to paint everyone with the same brush. There's some incredible local brands that always deliver, but sadly there's just way too many that don't and aren't serious enough about their brands to make them a whole lot more successful than they currently are and potentially can be.
Are you an influencer?
I wouldn't say I'm an influencer. I
How would you define that?
I struggle with the term, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think what it's become is just is something I'm very far removed from.
Okay.
I think initially I liked the idea of it when it was first, you know, coming out as a bit of a buzzword, but now it's something that I think I sort of try to avoid. And yeah, I try and just be as innovative as possible through living my daily life.
How would you define an influencer?
How would I define an influencer?
The correct term that you would almost sort of align yourself with, because now it's diluted, right? Like you said.
100%, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, look, I think from a high level perspective, you know, very, very surface way, an influencer is someone who has a certain appeal to a certain audience with a certain amount of engagement that would be involved enough with something that audience would want to be involved with because of their involvement, that perhaps because they look up to them or they're interested in what they do, they then have that ability to end up influencing their consumers, their followers, to also enjoy that product or whatever it is that they interact with because of the engagement that they get from their people. So I think that's about as basic as it gets, and it's because of that person that has that influence that makes them an influencer.
Very impressive.
So someone who can actually in some way affect the way something how well something does because of their involvement in it. Obviously, as a result, is what brands are hoping for.
Very impressive journey. Now, You like publishing books every now and then on your social media accounts, like the recent Elizabeth Gilbert.
Oh, publishing books that I'm reading.
Yes.
I mean,
oh, publicizing them.
You said that so casually. Oh, you like now every now and again just publishing books. Yeah, when I'm bored, I just write a book or two and then decide I'll just publish a book.
Like more recently, you put up a photo of
Big Magic Elizabeth Gilbert. Yes.
An advocate for creatives. Yes. Eat, Pray, Love. A lot of her TED talks are just about creatives and just being a creative. What role does reading do in everything else that you are part of?
Reading is everything. And I think for what anyone's doing at any point in their life, whatever sector, whatever industry, everyone should be reading up a storm. Like, there's no better food for your brain, better learning you can get, you know, more equipping that you can give yourself than just reading about as much as you can, reading about everything, you should be learning every single day about whatever it is that you do, in one way or another, or something else, and always stimulating your mind as much as possible. It should be the foundation of every single person's career and whatever it is they're moving towards their lives.
Three best picks of books. that you suggest.
You see, but you're also asking, you know, someone who studied English. So my interests come from that logophile perspective and that sort of phantasmical type of world as well. So I love just you know, beautiful writers. So I think if we're just looking at just general pleasant reading books, not life changing books, what do you call them, DIY books, or there's another term that
self-help.
People use self-help books.
Got you.
It sounds like you read a lot actually of the self-help books, so you're just like, yeah, that's me, self-help, yeah, that's it, yeah. Leadership 101 is on my desk right now. Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
I'm a big Oscar Wilde fan. I'd say The Curious Incident of the Dog at Nighttime, which is by Mark Haddon. And third, one of my favorites, probably between Life of Pi, Americana by Chimamanda.
Yes.
And Things Fall Apart.
John.
Yeah. Those are probably... roughly my top five, not in any order, but roughly my top five. There's so many books, it's hard to choose. But also, like the other ones that I really, really like, people wouldn't be interested in. So I'll just expose my geekiness if I go into that. So you know.
So your wise words to the young listeners of the Youth Leadership Platform across board. What would you want them to learn from Maps Maponyane? The person they see on TV all the damn time and on editorials.
Jeez, I think for me, it's always just about, you know, that whole notion of making sure that whatever it is that you are wanting to do, don't make a whole host of excuses to prevent you from doing it. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of things in the way, but you just obviously have to get started. You know, it's a very cliche thing, but it's all about getting started. I always use the analogy of a racetrack, essentially. If you're all in starting blocks and you're wanting to start something, so let's say we're all in this room and let's say there's eight of us, or actually I'll just use the exact number that there is of us. Let's say there's five of us, and you have the excuse of the fact that you just don't have, you feel like you don't have the experience. Cecily has the excuse of it's just not the right time. Your guest here, what's your next guest name? Big pardon? Atisha then says that she doesn't have the money, or, you know, just, yeah, she shows that that's her excuse for not starting. And then Atisha? Tseho. And then Tseho makes an excuse of another form. We're always making excuses and hiding behind them to keep us from actually starting whatever it is we want to start. But then I just decide, you know what, if I just don't leave these starting blocks now, I never will actually learn the route of where I'm going. So if you're running around this track, if I leave and I happen to trip over a big hurdle a quarter of the way and I have to start back where everyone else is, mm-hmm. you know, fine. But at least I got started. If I go again, everyone's still making the excuses, I'll get halfway through the track because I'll know that that hurdle's there and I would have learned from it because I started and I was working towards it. Fine. But if I go back for the third time and some people start leaving with me, they still have to go through that quarter of the way hurdle, the halfway hurdle. I can go three quarters, and then by the time I go back and everyone's only starting to fail, I've already learned that track. I've learned that course. I can wrap around it many times, and you actually start to set yourself in a completely different lane and level altogether. You set yourself apart from anyone else around you, and you start to pioneer whatever it is that you're doing that makes you completely distinguishable, and in the end leaves you with almost absolutely no competition. So having that attitude of just getting started and taking the risks and really making it you know, something that is worthwhile, and being hungry enough and being passionate enough about it, because, you know, it really is true that once you approach all those attitudes towards something, then everything else will follow. Don't stress about the fact that, you know, it's really tough and money hasn't come really quickly in or whatever. Yes. If it's something that's really worth pursuing and really worth doing, then everything else will take care of itself.
Wow. No, Maps Mopanyane, for you, if you just joined us today, thanks a lot for coming through to the studio today, man.
Thank you. I thought I was joining you till like 8 o'clock. I mean, we're just getting started.
We can do that off record. There's over lunch or something, and continue with the conversation. That would be plausible. You want to take me on that?
I mean, look, if you ever want to chat, of course, I don't have a problem. But thank you very much for pursuing this. You've been extremely persevering and persistent and diligent about making sure that I ended up on your platform. And keep doing what you're doing. It's really important that we have these kind of platforms for the youth out there. And it was a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks a lot. Cool. Follow the conversation on YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram, Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. We're switching gears right now, and I'm going to introduce my lovely producer and co-host, and switching gears, she'll come in, and that is the drop-dead gorgeous Modern Day Rapunzel, Cecily.
This is the Youth Leadership Platform, brought to you by Sibanye Gold.
At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za. Cliffcentral.com.